Just hours after Miami's gritty and exhilarating Game 3 win, we'll look back and ahead and analyze things we liked in the game and would want to see moving forward and the things the Heat team could do without. From Victor Oladipo's defense to Tyler Hero's minutes, we'll break it all down on today's edition of Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. However you may be listening or watching on YouTube, Odyssey, or on your favorite podcast app, thanks so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. I'm David Ramil, and with me, as always, is my co-host Wes Goldberg. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Well, Monday night's game will start later on today, but before we do that, we wanted to look behind and look at the Game 3 win because it was an exhilarating game, a really, really fun matchup that Miami, of course, wound up winning to take a 2-1 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals. We want to look at some of the things that we liked out of that game because, you know, things that Miami could continue to build off and then also some things we didn't like. But before we do get into that, we want to talk a little bit about the current injury situation because obviously that has continued to impact the Eastern Conference Finals. So right now the Miami Heat are listing Max Strus, PJ Tucker as questionable, but those are pretty regular mainstays of the injury report. Those are kind of sort of injuries that they're just, you know, continuously nagging those two players, but they've been available for every game this series, and I can expect that to be the case moving forward. However, Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero are all listed as questionable as well. Not sure we didn't have any updates necessarily on Tyler's injury, although that I think you mentioned that it was listed as a left groin sprain.
Officially being a groin strain, which makes a lot of sense given that he looks a step slower. He just hasn't looked right, you know, and it makes sense as something lower body, something like a groin injury that does limit guys in that way. So we'll see what happens with Tyler. Eric Spoelstra was non-committal after the game on Saturday night and then again today at practice on Sunday afternoon. So that sounds like it'll be closer to a game time decision than anything else, even though they're not officially calling it that. And then with Jimmy Butler, it's the same sort of thing. Inflammation in the knee, exactly like we said. The trainers basically looked at it at halftime, said, you're not going back out there. And he's going to be undergoing treatment for these couple of days while the team is in Boston. And Spoelstra, after the game, essentially saying, like, these 2 days of treatment are massive. And so, again, not officially being called the game time decision, but very much kind of getting that impression right now. So we'll see.
Yeah, and Miami could do with both of those players out there healthy and 100%, but you know what? There's all right now. That's the convenience of having a lead in the series is that you can afford possibly to rest a player, knowing that you also have home court advantage that you return back on Wednesday to take on these same Celtics at FTX Arena. So we'll see what happens in Game 4. On the Boston side of things, Marcus Smart, who rolled his ankle in that third quarter, looked like he'd be out for the rest of the series. It was, you know, obviously he made his return. He's currently listed as questionable for Game 4. As is Robert Williams, who sat out Game 3 with knee soreness. And at this point, who knows whether or not either one of them will play. I expect both of them to be available. But, again, no confirmation from Ime Udoka other than, you know, that they're listed as questionable. They're getting treatment, and we'll see what happens at game time. So we'll have more updates for that via our Twitter account. Make sure you follow us. But let's get into the show at hand. Let's start off with the things that we liked from Game 3 that maybe we'd want to see from the Heat moving forward. Why don't you kick us off, Wes?
Well, we got to start with Bam Adebayo, don't we? Incredible playoff performance for him. Best of this postseason for him and for the Miami Heat. And one of the things kind of watching that game again this morning, David, that I really liked from Bam was just him bringing the ball up. And it sounds like a small thing, but trust me, it's a big thing, okay? Because when you've got Bam getting the rebound and not immediately looking to outlet it to a guard where he's just pushing the ball down the court himself. Right. And it doesn't even need to be like him looking like Giannis out there, pushing it at 100 miles an hour. Just him literally just bringing the ball up at a normal pace is, I think, a really good thing for him because, number one, puts the ball in his hands, which is important. Yep. It kind of gets him in attack mode, right? It gets him thinking, looking to set things up offensively for either himself or his teammates. And you just like to put Bam in that mindset early. It just sort of empowers him. You know what I mean? But also, like, there was examples of this in the first quarter. Bam gets the rebound. He's bringing the ball up. Kyle Lowry is flanked right to his right side. And instead of just giving it to Lowry, as you know, a center normally would just give it to the point guard, he brings the ball up, and Grant Williams, who was his main assignment early in the game, starts to backpedal as Bam is bringing it up past half court and then towards the three-point line. You've got Grant Williams now backpedaling because, well, it's Bam Adebayo, and he's probably going to try to get to the rim. But he immediately flows right into a handoff with Tyler Hero. Flows right into a handoff with Tyler Hero. Hero gets the ball, and then immediately hits Bam on the roll. What was interesting about this is because you had Grant backpedaling. As soon as Bam finds Tyler on that dribble handoff, now you've got all these backpedaling defenders kind of lurching forward, right, towards Tyler Hero at the beyond the three-point line. And now you've got Bam being able to use his speed because, remember, he's still going in the same direction, right, towards the basket, blowing by Grant Williams, who has defended him well this entire series. And now you've got an easy, easy layup for Bam Adebayo right at the basket instead of messing around, you know, in sort of further away from the basket in the painting area and stuff like that. He's getting right to the rim early, which, like we talked about last night after the recap, kind of sets up the rest of his mid-range game and all the other things that he got into later in the game. I love Bam bringing the ball up. I think it makes Boston have to think because you can't ignore the guards, whether it's Tyler Hero, Kyle Lowry, whoever, but they have to start defending Bam Adebayo sort of, you know, extended out from the paint, which opens up so many things near the rim for other guys too, and of course for Bam like he did in that first quarter example. So love to see Bam Adebayo bringing the ball up. By the way, just spoiler, a lot of my likes are Bam Adebayo related. We're going to get to a lot of them, but this was the one I wanted to lead off with.
Well, I've got one myself, but to your point, there were a couple of possessions there where he was able to just drive past a set defense too because of that speed. You know, so again, not necessarily like Giannis, but somewhat Giannis-like and being able to initiate that offense. Yeah, that's what he's supposed to be able to do, and he can do it. He's got the skill. He's got the touch. If you can attack the basket before Boston's defense sets, why not do it? And these are the kinds of things that we're missing. To that point, Robert Williams wasn't in the game. I still think he can continue that trend moving forward. I still think he can attack the basket, especially in transition, especially if he's bringing the ball up. Robert Williams is going to have to adjust. And if there's somebody else like a Kyle or a Tyler or somebody along those lines playing alongside him, kind of flanking him as he's driving to the hoop, that's an easy dish off right there for another basket because Williams isn't going to be able to recover if he's guarding Bam. My like is also
Wait, one more thing on that, though, because the Robert Williams thing you brought up is a really good point, and there's a lot of questions. Can Bam do this against a Celtics defense that does have Robert Williams? And it's a good question because the Celtics have just been planting Robert Williams in the paint. But the Heat have been working to get Bam involved in this series all series long by kind of just with the passes to him in the post and all the pocket passes, trying to get him in pick and roll where he starts on the baseline and comes up and sets the screen, you know, a pick and roll, basic pick and roll. Where if you're getting him the ball in a full court setting and now Robert Williams has to come up and guard him just like Grant Williams had to and all these things, now you like Bam being able to blow by Robert Williams. You're not just having Robert Williams planted in the paint. So that might be a way to counter that. That's a good call by you.
Well, to that point, I also like Bam Adebayo's mid-range game. Like, I think it was a big factor in yesterday's game, something that we have not seen from him consistently or regularly or even effectively throughout most of the playoffs. He finished 6 of 11 from mid-range, according to NBA statistics there. The footage on that looked great. Just being able to rewatch that, those shots being taken, and just the fact that he had confidence. There was that one play where he was being guarded well by Al Horford at the top of the painted area. Horford stripped him. He bobbles the ball, gets it back, and says, you know what? I still felt comfortable shooting the ball. I'm going to shoot it again, and I'll shoot it right in your face, and I'm going to hit it. And he did. 6 of 11. That's really, really impressive shooting for a big man. You know, Bam has always had that. He's slowly been building that over the past couple of seasons, but we're starting to see it more and more. And if he can continue to do this moving forward, I think it sets up everything else. Because from that point forward, you saw how the defense had to shift a lot when he had the ball in his hands. He could face up a Grant Williams or an Al Horford, and he's not sure what's going to happen next. Is he going to unleash another jumper in my face, or is he going to drive right past me using that speed? Is he going to be able to use his strength on a smaller player like Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown? Because those are things that he was able to do effectively. Right. And I think it was all kind of set up by that mid-range game. So I'd like to see that more and more moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that was another one of my likes for Bam, was just I loved him facing up Marcus Smart, to your point, when he got that switch and you had the smaller Marcus Smart just kind of guard him. That's a height advantage that Bam has, right? And he went 3 for 3 with the Defensive Player of the Year, Marcus Smart, guarding him. That's an interesting stat. And Boston has been really willing. The Celtics have been really willing to give Bam Adebayo that switch, right? Like, they haven't been fighting it all that much. Some of their other wing players, like, they'll have the main guy, whether it's Grant Williams or Al Horford, sort of fight through the screen and not give up the switch so easily. But with Marcus Smart, they've been really willing to give up that switch rather easily. But if Bam can kind of settle into facing up, not even trying to post him up. There was one play where he tried to post him up on the low left block, and Marcus Smart sort of took the chair out from under him and forced an offensive foul. Don't even bother with that. Just turn around, face that dude up. You're so much taller than him. Marcus Smart is a very good defender, but when you have the height advantage and you've got that mid-range game working to your point, might as well just shoot that shot if you've got it. So that was a really good one. Yeah.
So we'll bring up some of the things we don't like coming up next. But before we do that, just to tell you about a new sponsor of the show. Feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and to truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. So many of the products that we advertise and so much of the things that people want to buy are about things that make them feel better, whether it's something to help you sleep or something that helps your diet or things that help you exercise better. Well, guess what? It all starts with your diet, which is why Sakara is such a big factor, something that we're proud to sponsor or have as a sponsor of the show. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. They give you the tools you need to transform your life with their organic, ready-to-eat meal delivery program. Who doesn't love that? And functional wellness essentials. They're nutritional designed. Chef-crafted breakfasts, lunch and dinner are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your door. Who doesn't love that? And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to Sakara.com/LockedOn20 to enter the code LockedOn20 at checkout. That's Sakara, Sakara.com/LockedOn20 to get 20% off your first order. Sakara.com/LockedOn20. Thanks for making your Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Make sure to check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and the author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA Draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, Big Boards. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. Well, you know what's also available is things that we don't like from Game 3, unfortunately. Overall, game was fantastic for Miami. They bounced back. They were resilient. All the things that we love about this Heat team. But there were some little details here and there that we'd like them to fix up. So, Wes, what's one of the things that stood out to you that you don't necessarily like in Game 3?
Yeah, we should start with Jaylen Brown, who had the 40-point game for the Celtics, right? And Victor Oladipo's defense against Jaylen was so great. We talked about that in the recap, but it was late.
I'll talk about that later, too, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it was awesome. But you can't rely on Victor Oladipo only to guard Jaylen Brown. One of the things that I did not like about their overall defense on Jaylen Brown was just they were letting him catch the ball pretty cleanly. And then not only that, but then sort of just get into his steps. Coming off of screen, they weren't really creating any sort of friction, right? They were just sort of letting him get downhill. And then when Jaylen does get downhill, like he's a really powerful straight line driver. He drives with speed and with force, and he's such an athlete. Like when you let him get downhill, all of a sudden, Miami's defense is scrambling, and he's able to get the switches onto a Gabe Vincent or a Max Strus, somebody who's a little undersized, right? Yeah. And that's why Jaylen is able to not only score 40 points, but get to the free throw line as many times as he did, too. I would like to see them.
Not enough for him, by the way. I can't believe he complained about that in his postgame presser, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. I didn't even see that. Yeah. I think that the Heat should just make it a little bit tougher for Jaylen. Maybe not even necessarily to just catch the ball. I'm not talking about like Joel Embiid style denial here, but just make it a little tougher for him up at the level of the screen. Don't let him just get into his first and second steps quite as easily. I would even experiment, not the entire game because of the domino effect that you don't want to leave too many of Boston's shooters open, but
maybe
putting two on the ball here and there just to throw him off, because Jaylen Brown, I keep saying this, can't dribble. And you need to exploit that sort of the way that we've seen teams like Philadelphia exploit Tyler Hero, right? And his lack of size, where you're trapping him and it's starting to force him into tough situations and he can turn the ball over. You can do a similar thing with Jaylen Brown. He's not undersized, but he doesn't have that handle, right? To sort of get to dribble out of those situations. So if you just throw it at him like semi-randomly, when maybe you need a kind of a stop, or maybe you feel like you might need to force a turnover in a situation, maybe late in the clock specifically. You could do that to Jaylen Brown. I'd like to see them mix it up more. But the main point, the one that I didn't like, is just don't let it be easy for him to get to his first and second step and then get downhill and then force those switches that he's looking for.
Yeah, I agree. And yet at the same time, look, one of my dolecks, and I'll bring it up now, is just allowing him to have free range in the mid-range. He was 11 of 11 on twos. He was attacking the basket. He had a lot of space there. A lot of that built off of his three-point shooting. But I wonder, and maybe you have some insight about it. I feel like they're kind of allowing that space purposely, right? Because they know that he can either bobble his way into a turnover or he's not as adept a passer as, say, Tatum or somebody like that. And I think they're kind of sagging off on purpose rather to help off on somebody else. If he's able to attack the basket and they can still have that primary defender and somebody else helping off to the side there, rather than sending two on the ball, as you mentioned, you know, that kind of allows a free roaming defender to put pressure on Tatum. And I think that's more effective because Tatum of the two, certainly more dangerous. Like, is it possible that they're letting Brown get his points?
It's not so much letting Brown, but it's like, okay, like how many guys can you possibly double? You know, you only have so many defenders out there. And so obviously you're trying to double Jason Tatum and you don't want to just double Jaylen Brown and then leave Jason Tatum covered. Right. And so, yeah, that's certainly part of it. But Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's minutes don't align completely. They align, you know, fairly quite a bit. But like I said, it's not something you got to do all the time. That's what I'm saying. Like, late in the shot clock, you're not as worried about the swing action. Jaylen Brown's probably going to try to force something up late in the shot clock. Right. All right, well, then double him. And it's not that they didn't do that. It's not like this is no new concept to Miami. And their version of doubling him was just to, like, you know, send Victor Oladipo on him. And just say, you know, you deal with this. You screw him up. And maybe it's as simple as, all right, you just play Victor Oladipo and you line his minutes with Jaylen Brown and you don't even have to double him. You just put Oladipo on him, who basically just owns his lunch money at this point. But you can't rely on that level of performance from Victor Oladipo defensively every single game. And the Celtics are really good and Jaylen Brown's talented enough to have their own counters to it. So we'll see. But I just think mix it up a little bit. Just mix it up a little bit. They are going over the screens. Jimmy Butler has been his primary defender. Him not being available for half the game was a major thing. Like, when Jimmy's covering Jaylen Brown, obviously he's going to get a little bit more physical with him. But I just, in game three, because Jimmy Butler wasn't available and for maybe other reasons, they were just making things a little too easy for Jaylen Brown. You just need to mix it up a little bit more with him is all I'm saying. Doesn't have to be some wholesale change, just a few different looks here and there.
What do you think is a counter for Boston, aside from just having Robert Williams and attack the paint and be a lob threat there? Is there something else that you think Boston could do to, you know, maybe make Brown's drive to the hoop a little bit more effective?
I think they're going to keep doing the same thing. Like, they're bringing those screens up pretty high for him. Obviously, if you have Robert Williams there, that's a brick wall screener that you can bring back, and that's only going to help Jaylen Brown. But as far as their game plan with Jaylen, like, I think it's been really good. You know, you're not doing any side pick and roll stuff. Well, you're not doing a whole lot of side pick and roll stuff for him because, again, you don't necessarily want him driving baseline and having to make decisions in the half court, you know, on that side of the half court, on that side of the basket. I think you really do want him just sort of right in the middle of the floor getting downhill, and for the most part they've done that. We'll see if they have an adjustment to what Miami does, but I think for Jaylen it would just be, all right, you know, really focus on that handle and try to sell contact probably early and try to draw fouls would probably be the way to do it. But we'll see. I think Jaylen Brown needs to really study what it is that Victor Oladipo did for sure. I think he will, and he'll come with some sort of counter or maybe just sort of an awareness of what Oladipo is trying to do. Maybe you try to exploit Oladipo being aggressive in the passing lanes and get easier shots at the basket that way. Maybe go with lobs more often for Jaylen because he can do that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a perfect segue because I think if we talk about things that we like, certainly Victor Oladipo's defense was one of them.
Yeah.
There was a great statistic put out by, I think, Grant Williams, I want to say, of ESPN, had a really nice stat there that Victor Oladipo himself had 8 deflections on the night. We talked about this in the recap. You brought it up specifically, and it was a really good point about
Matt
how
Williams.
Effective.
Sorry,
Matt Williams.
Williams, ESPN.
Yeah, I should know that. I should know that because, you know, the third baseman for the San Francisco Giants was Matt Wells. But anyway, that's an old reference there. Eight deflections from Victor Oladipo, and you brought it up, a great point again, and that he was just active in playing the passing lanes. But so was all of the Miami Heat team. They were fantastic in doing that all night without Jimmy Butler there, still able to force turnovers, to lead to those transition baskets that we talked about, and Oladipo's just defensive intensity, even as he's not making an impact offensively because the shot's not there, and he's certainly not going to get to the line or to the rim as easily as Jimmy Butler has done throughout this postseason, but he can still bring something defensively, something mm-hmm. that they absolutely need, and I think that's such a crucial component of what Miami can do if they want to be able to steal game four, is be able to ramp that defensive presence up. So I just recorded a segment for Locked On NBA. I was asked what I think that the Heat need to do in order to be able to steal game four and be able to, you know, control the series. And I think it continues to be their defense. As much as we want to focus on the offense, we want to focus on Bam being aggressive, and we certainly love it from what we saw from him, Miami's defense leads to more easy baskets. It's just shuts, puts the clamps yeah. down at what Boston could do, throws them off completely. I still have questions about Boston's IQ, Boston's resiliency. I just don't think they have it yet. As many times as, you know, Jason Tatum has gone to the Eastern Conference Finals and everything else, I still like Miami's toughness and internal fortitude and their ability to put pressure on opponents significantly more. So I think it all starts with the defensive end.
To your point of deflections, you mentioned Victor Oladipo, eight deflections in the game. Kyle Lowry had five. P.J. Tucker had four. Jimmy Butler had three in his one half
minutes.
Of playing.
Yeah.
Bam had three. Max Strus had one. Gabe had a couple. Tyler had one. Caleb had one. Duncan had one. It's all across the board, right? It's just all these guys.
I should have brought up that statistic, too. Boston as a team only had seven. So less than Victor Oladipo had all on his own. So fantastic statistic there.
Yeah, and that shows, I mean, look, the Heat have been really good at jumping passing lanes all season. That's not new, but this is another level, right? And I don't know if that's a Game 3 one-off, and they just, again, they were just feeling it that game, whatever it was. They were just reading the passing lanes. But it does also show a concerted effort to get those deflections, create loose ball situations, and potentially transition opportunities, right? Like, that is a concerted effort from this Heat team. We mentioned that as an underlining advantage in this series for Miami. We'll see if Boston tries to exploit that, because there is a level of aggression defensively that the Heat have that can be exploited, right? Like, you can, if you're jumping those passing lanes, it does potentially give up easy baskets. But the Heat have been really good at timing it. They've been really good at figuring that kind of stuff out. I forgot where I was going with that point. But yeah, that's the point.
Well, you know, as an aside, though, I just want to add, I am very, very, very sick already of hearing about how Boston's wing players coughed up the ball and that they just threw it away, that their, you know, lack of focus and determination and everything else cost them the game. You know what? Miami's defense has been pretty good all season long, and I think that was certainly evidenced in Game 3's win as well. You can't take away what Miami was able to do defensively. Like, did Boston make mistakes? Hell yeah. Did Miami capitalize on those? Yeah, that's kind of what you do in order to win basketball games. You have to be able to take advantage of those mistakes. And while Boston made them, that doesn't mean that Miami's defense was just like, oh, look at Jaylen Brown bobbling the ball. Let's let him do it and see if he can regain control and maybe get an easier look at the basket. Like, what's the problem here? Like, I'm really confused at how Celtics fans are trying to justify this in their own head as Boston screwing the pooch as opposed to Miami
Tell you where you went wrong here. Yeah. Trying to figure out what Boston fans are thinking. That's your problem.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Well, what's one of your likes before we wrap up our segment here?
Mine is actually, it requires a little bit of a deep dive, so let's save it for the next one.
Ooh, that's what's called a tease, ladies and gentlemen. That's where you get paid the big bucks. Speaking of big bucks, just a reminder that our partners over at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Just a reminder that you can always reach us via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskYellowHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. I don't know where we are right now. I checked it earlier in the day. We are this close to 3,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. To think of everything that we've built since the season started, just in 5 months, was it 6 months now? It's just phenomenal work.
Yep.
So much support from our fans, and all we're asking for is a couple more people to hit that subscribe button so they can get
also
the
best hit that like button, guys. Hit that like button. Don't forget to hit that like. That really helps us. All right, so the like that I hinted at.
Nice segue.
Hasn't been used all that often, and I don't think that the Heat want to use this all the time, but I really like when they have PJ screening for a guard, PJ Tucker screening for a guard. I think it's a really interesting sort of like second layer of the pick and roll offense that Miami, you know, primarily uses with Bam Adebayo. But when you have PJ screening for a guard, the way that the Celtics are guarding PJ Tucker, in that they aren't, is basically their defensive philosophy on PJ Tucker. If he's going to make corner threes, go ahead and let him make corner threes. That's basically what they're how they're treating him. That's not new. PJ's seen that a lot. A lot of his looks have been wide open all year. Credit to him for knocking down those corner threes. But guy, like, you're not really worried about PJ going off for 30 points and beating you. You're mostly just going to let him have those. But Miami is countered pretty recently, and in this Boston series specifically, by having PJ kind of come up from the corners and set a screen on like the second side after some initial action with a Gabe Vincent or even a Max Strus, or like in game three with Kyle Lowry back with him. And I think that's a really interesting look that the Heat can go to a little bit more often, right? I would like to see a little bit more of that. Again, not primary offense stuff, but just like, all right, mix this in. You know, do it once a quarter. You know what I mean? Whenever PJ's in the game. Because when you're the Celtics basically ignoring PJ Tucker from the perimeter and he's setting a screen for a ball handler, well, that's just a one-on-one situation. Or even if PJ really lands the screen, a one-on-zero situation, because the Celtics are going to switch everything, that's like a one-on-zero situation for whatever guard he's screening for. We saw, I think it was Gabe Vincent, get a really clean look in that in the first half in game three. You can mix that in with Max Strus. We've seen it. That's not a new thing because of the three-point shooting and the space that he could provide. I think you can actually get really clean looks for Max in those ways. If Duncan Robinson sees minutes going forward, ditto for him. And obviously with Kyle Lowry and his pull-up game, which was on point. That's not one of my likes, but I liked it. I liked it. The Kyle Lowry pull-up game was on point in his return in game three, too. So a little bit more PJ screening action. Sprinkle that in a little bit more than we've already seen it. I think that's really worked nicely for them.
Yeah, and it worked to get him a nice wide open three-pointer, too, when he ran the pick and roll with Jimmy. They wound up switching. He wound up getting the double as he was rolling towards the basket. Recognized that PJ was wide open. Jimmy was able to use that, you know, fantastic cross-court pass. Was able to swing a right to a wide open PJ Tucker. He nails that three. Mm-hmm. Fantastic look from him. So, I mean, it's great. It's a great tool. And you know what? If the play breaks down, again, especially considering the potential return of Robert Williams, you've got Tucker as a potential roll man, too. He's got that floater game going. I just like his ability to get those kinds of shots because I think his ball handling has been somewhat unheralded. Like, he's been really good at kind of initiating things. You don't want him to do it too much, but in certain situations, he's good as a release valve for an offensive possession that might break down.
He's been a solid straight line driver all season. I mean, we've done this whole thing about him going from the corners, and then all of a sudden guys are closing out after he makes a couple early in the game, and then he's driving baseline and hitting them with the floater and stuff like that. Like, that's part of his game now. It's in his arsenal. And obviously, like, if the play breaks down, well, you screen for a guard. The ball's in the guard's hands. Like, if it's somebody like Kyle Lowry or Gabe Vincent, you kind of trust them to flow into something else offensively. What else did you like in the game?
Well, I was going to say, I think we have to go to, well, if we're keeping the whole idea of likes, don't likes, we're just going to go through these kind of quickly there. For me, a like was Caleb Martin. I just think the game is a little bit more fun, more exciting when you've got Martin there. I think it takes some of the pressure off of Jimmy Butler. I don't think that you're necessarily going to get the same kind of effective performance from Victor Oladipo moving forward. I think you'd want to be able to rely on your depth. I know we kind of vacillate between this somewhat because you tighten your rotation, you loosen your rotation, but you've got to just find the guys who can contribute on a night-to-night basis. And I remain pretty steadfast in that belief. Caleb plays 10 minutes. They were effective. He hits a three-pointer, gets a dunk at the rim. He just provides that spark. Same way he has all season. You dance with the girl that brought you there. I think you want to continue to kind of move forward with that kind of idea, because I think he's just more effective. And again, it's also more fun to see when Caleb's hitting those shots. And I don't think that Boston's preparing and or worried about Caleb Martin, so that kind of gets him open looks too. He's not a savvy ball handler or shot creator for others. At the same time, if he's attacking with that same kind of ferocity, he's still making a positive impact. So a little bit more Caleb for me.
Made a three late in that Celtics game, and he was humped because he had been missing a whole lot of them before that. And so, and Boston's doing the same thing, but even more so with him versus the way that they've been guarding PJ Tucker, just completely ignoring him. Like with PJ, they'll at least, like, he gets the ball in the corner, they'll sort of fake the closeout. You know, they'll kind of jog in that closeout. With Caleb, they're like, go ahead, man. Hey, here's the basket.
Yeah,
go for it.
That rebound.
And players hate that. They know that. They know they're being disrespected. They know that they feel like it's a perceived slight. You know what I mean? And so when you make the three in their face, it does, I would imagine, feel very good. I think that's a really good way to explain or sort of describe Caleb Martin's game. Is he's just really fun to watch and he makes the game more fun. I can't disagree with that. I have been a little bit less enthused with his minutes in this series overall. I just think that the way Boston is guarding him, unless he's making those threes, I'm not sure he has a place in this series. But if Jimmy Butler is banged up or if he has to even miss time, Caleb Martin will see more minutes in this series regardless. So that's fine. Is it mine for a don't like? How are we doing this?
Either way. Just go through them.
All right, I'll do a quick one.
Something you like.
Don't like. I didn't like the Duncan, Tyler, and Gabe minutes when they were all on the floor together. Those lineups when those three were on the floor. It didn't hurt them in game three. Miami went to a zone with those guys. They held up defensively, and it was fine. But I also, like, it was also a game where Jason Tatum was clearly out of it, and those are matchups that Jason Tatum will routinely exploit probably going forward. I don't think you should tempt fate. I understand that there was some injury stuff and everything like that, but that was even, I think, before Jimmy left the game. You had Kyle Lowry back, and I thought he was as good defensively as he was offensively last night. I would not tempt fate with those Duncan, Tyler Hero, Gabe lineups. You're just giving up too much size, a little too many pressure points for the Celtics to look at. So I would not tempt fate with those lineups.
Yeah, I don't like injuries, and I know that's a kind of wide catch-all there, but at the same time, we've seen them shape the series. We've seen them shape the narratives and the stories and what people kind of focus on, and it's not good because it's taken away from some of the enjoyment of what Miami has been able to do. Because they wouldn't have been able to do this without Robert Williams, or in the first series, in the first game, if Marcus was healthy or whatever. Like, this, like, so much has been taken away from what Miami has been able to accomplish. You know, even disregarding their victories over Philadelphia and Atlanta, because of course they had John Collins hobbling on one leg, or Joel Embiid going through all these myriad injuries, they would never have been able to get past them. I'm just so sick of that talk. At the same time, it also provided this really weird kind of carefully crafted, orchestrated spark when Marcus Smart runs through the hallway in order to return back to the lineup. Jason Tatum getting work on some alleged injury that was incurred during the game there, providing this spark. Again, it was a Willis Reed going to the Madison Square Garden in the NBA Finals type. You know, I'm not even going to mention Paul Pierce shitting his
Paul
pants.
Paul Pierce pooping his pants. Yeah. No, I mean, look, nobody likes injuries. And if you're here rooting for the Celtics to get hurt, like, you kind of suck as a person. Like, nobody likes injuries. I'm with you. And it did create some weird, like, momentum somehow, like some Ewing
drama,
theory kind of stuff a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it was very strange. One last thing that I like, because we should end on a like.
Yeah.
Bam Adebayo rolling hard to the basket. I told you I had one more Bam thing. Bam Adebayo rolling hard to the basket was awesome, okay? That was great. Sets up Miami's offense completely. When he is getting to the rim, even versus like 4 feet away and then settling for those push shots early in the game before he sort of established dominance at the basket, I still like him getting that deep penetration. And then obviously that opens up everything else. We talked about Bam's scoring so much.
Right.
Obviously a playoff high for him this season. It was also a playoff high this season for him in assists, with 6 assists. I mean, it literally opens up the entire offense. It opened up the split cuts for Max and for Gabe and all these things when he's facilitating out of the low post. It helps everything. It has a domino effect. It'll be interesting to see how Boston counters that. Do they try to meet him up higher at the level of the screen or things like that? And if they, instead of dropping, right? Because when Bam is attacking that drop and he's got a head of steam, then we saw what he's able to do, right? He does what we just saw. You know, he's able to just sky right over Al Horford or Grant Williams or whoever it is. I'll be interested to see if the Celtics kind of ditch the drop against Bam, try to meet him up higher, create more friction early in the offense for him. And if they do that, then what Miami's counter to that counter could be. And we saw glimpses of this in Game 3 where they have P.J. Tucker in the dunker spot just sort of waiting there. You could do that with P.J. You could do that with somebody like Caleb Martin, who's more of a lob threat than P.J., right? And you could start kind of getting the lob over the top of Boston's defense. With Bam being as good as of a playmaker as he is, again, with those six assists last night, that would be open for him. And I would like to see if Boston does do something, because they have to do something, right? They can't just let him careen his way to the basket for a second straight game. They're going to have to counter with something. Well, that's the obvious early counter that I think Bam could go to. I'll be interested. That's what I'll be watching for, partly in Game 4.
I hate to kind of take away from the positivity of the like. At the same time, I want to focus on a positive too. But do you think that this is puts more pressure? Like, we talked about whether or not Miami has stolen the control of the series, which, you know, might be too early to tell. But with Bam being able to look that good in Game 3, and if Jimmy's able to bounce back and be healthy and be the version of Jimmy that we've seen early on, does that put more pressure on the Celtics? Like, are they going to be able to adjust to this potential threat of two Heat players being able to dominate offensively, knowing what Jimmy was able to do in Game 1 and what Bam was able to do in Game 3, and knowing, again, that Kyle Lowry's still there waiting in the wings and capable, certainly, of having a big game himself? Do you think that it puts, you know, again, does it make things harder for Boston knowing that these two guys can put up these kinds of points on a nightly basis?
I mean, it does. And if we're talking about how Boston responds in Game 4, they're going to respond in a very big way. The Celtics are going to have a really good game in Game 4. Jason Tatum is not going to play the way that he did in Game 3. It's just not going to happen. Mm. Like, Jason Tatum's going to come out. This could be, like, this has all the makings of, like, a Tatum classic. I mean, this is what we've seen from him in these playoffs, right? Like, where he goes out and scores 40. The Heat will make it tough on him, but they've got to be ready for a serious punchback from the Celtics. But that's why we talk about these counters. The Celtics are on the ropes right now. They know they can't lose both of these games at home. They can't. Right. They lose these games at home, this series is over. Heat right? Five, it might not end. It might not be. Well, yeah, it's probably Heat and 5. It might not be Heat and 5. Maybe it's Heat and 6. Whatever. The Celtics don't win the series if they lose the next game. They know that. They don't win the series if they lose the next game. So they're going to come out swinging. They're going to come out energized. The Heat have a lot of different things they got to figure out. Namely, is Jimmy Butler going to play in this game? Right. But they've got to be ready for a hard counterpunch, because it's coming.
Yeah, well, we'll be there to recap the game. We'll probably be going live immediately after that game. Yep. So make sure to stay, you know, subscribe to the show.
With a special guest.
Yes, a surprise special guest will be on the show. So make sure you check that out. And also, thank you so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Now make your second listen Locked On NBA. From the first jump ball of the tournament to the last possession of the finals, Locked On experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams. This is David Ramil signing up for now. Thanks so much for joining me, Wes.
Wrap it up, E. Like and subscribe on YouTube.